Hannah, we'll start with you here right off the top. Do the Mets need to make drastic changes to their core this offseason?
Okay, I think a couple things can be true. One is that the season was a colossal failure. The defense was oftentimes sloppy. They played without urgency. They obviously lacked the necessary starting pitching. But the offense was pretty good. They were a top five offense in all of baseball by WRC+. If you look at their Pythag records or what they should have won based on runs allowed and runs scored, they should have been, I think, an 86-win team, which is not fantastic, but it would have made the postseason. We'd be having a very different conversation right now. So I don't know that they necessarily need to blow up the position player core or kind of make changes just for the sake of making changes. I think what David Stearns was alluding to is the fact that they have a lot of players right now who you want to keep their bat in the lineup, but it feels like they need to maybe move down that defensive scale in terms of leverage, defensive leverage. And to me, that maybe looks like Brandon Nimmo is a salary dump trade candidate if you can, because you want to just clear up a little bit of space to improve your defense, but you can't just go around the diamond and look at every position player and say, all right, we want to keep that much offense that we were getting out of Pete Alonso, for instance, but improve the defense, because there aren't just, you know, five-tool players all over baseball. You can't plug in a five-tool player at all nine positions. So I think they should look for where they can unclog maybe the logjam, but not be too drastic in how they look to reshape the lineup.
Yeah, the difficulty on that is, like, he talked all about run prevention yesterday, right? There was nothing about, hey, we need to keep our offense and be better on the run prevention. It was just like run prevention. And if you look at the offensive guys, like you're talking about, Hannah, most of those guys are below average defensively, right? Soto is below average defensively. Nimmo has been. Alonso has been. And they got to really improve the defense. And so, to your point, like, two of those guys are probably not going anywhere. Lindor's got a full no trade now. He had a 15-team no trade, but now he's a 10-5 guy as of this year. So he has complete control where he goes. Soto, obviously, full no trade. And so, you need Pete. Like, how can you go without Pete? I mean, they may decide to do that. But to your point, Brandon Nimmo is the one that maybe has the most flexibility. He also has a full no trade, too, though. So you look at those four guys, it gets really difficult to move any of them without, you know, maybe getting something in hand. It doesn't mean you don't try. It doesn't mean you couldn't go to them and say, listen, we think this would be a better situation. What would it take to allow us to trade you here? And you could do it that way, but it's exponentially more difficult making those type of deals. And I think it's hard to think that two of those guys would be gone, maybe one,
right?
You know, and then adding to it is the way I kind of view it.
So here's the predicament. Juan Soto's not going anywhere. We all can agree on
right.
that. Francisco Lindor, all the talk all season is he's going to be the next captain of the New York Mets. He had this amazing 2024 season. 2025, still a 30-30 guy. He's not going anywhere. Most Mets fans are of the mindset that they want Pete Alonso back. So when you have those three, that's the main infrastructure of your core. Now, are there pieces such as Mark Vientos, Jeff McNeil? You mentioned the difficulty in trying to move a guy like Brandon Nimmo. That, to me, Sal, is where changes need to be made, because the bottom line for the Mets is, we can talk about, yes, Hannah, they should have been, in theory, an 86-win team, and yes, that would have qualified for making the postseason. A year ago, they were in the NLCS. They gave Juan Soto $1 billion, and they missed the playoffs. When that happens and you're an organization, you can't look at the team and say, everything's okay. We're running it back. GM's the same. Manager's the same. Players are the same. Can't do it.
Right.
Can't do it. The optic is not there. So something within the infrastructure of the team has got to be different.
Now, this team, 8 games over 500 in the last 3 years, with a lot of highs, a lot of lows. How do you judge the ceiling for this core?
How do I judge? I'm sorry.
The ceiling for the core players you've got.
We have very good to elite core players who at times have played at a very high level and a year ago had a very good season together. And so I think the ceiling remains high.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, October the 5th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and continue to go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com, the new and improved website. You can get our free Substack chat just for becoming a member. Want some premium content? It's there for you. Get me on all your favorite podcasting services and whatever social media outlet I'm on. So check out the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Welcome to our first official off-season edition of the Talking Mets podcast. It's been about a week now, exactly a week. Well, if you want to count, I'm coming to you here early on a Sunday morning, so pull up your eggs and bagels and coffee or whatever you like to eat. And if you're listening to this early, well, let's have breakfast together. I don't know when you're listening to this. Let's, you know, pull up a chair and let's listen. Just the old Vin Scully statement. But, you know, I guess it's a little bit less than a week if, you know, if you count where the Mets started late afternoon last Sunday. But we've had a time to now marinate and reflect and obviously watch some teams a lot that we don't like. The Phillies, the Yankees, the Dodgers have some good postseason moments, more so the Dodgers and the Yankees maybe. And now we begin the task together here of moving forward and building a 2026 squad with whatever information that's been given to us. So here's how I am going to play this. And, you know, we're going to have a little talk here. And I know that sometimes when I have these talks, you guys send me nasty emails and things like that. But we have a big show, you know. So here's how we're going to do it. We're going to have a little talk first. Then we're going to go through the current roster today. That's all we're going to do. We're going to go through the current roster, who's going to stay, who's going to go, some scenarios that are out there. We're going to take David Stern's words and maybe play into that. And then we're going to round out. I got a couple of mailbag questions. So today is going to be all about the current roster. So let's start out here. Here's the little talk. You guys were angry. You were upset. You were hurt. All the type of emotions that come with a terrible loss on Sunday, an excruciating final month, an excruciating final 3 months where it was almost like you were trying to right the ship, you were trying to find the gas pedal, and nothing worked. The few highs that were there were not high enough, the lows were plentiful, and you're left scratching your head is how can this happen after last year of OMG Grimace, after the offseason of Soto, how can this happen? So we'll talk about that. But here's where we're at, though, in terms of moving on, and it's important to move on. And I think for the most part, the fan base is starting to move on. I don't know if the media is. The media, clearly, some members of the media still, while the Yankees are in the postseason and they cover the Yankees, are still talking about the Mets. You could figure out who that is. But the day after, you got the Cone tweet apology. Steve Cone gave you the apology. He gave you the tweet. He did what any owner of a business would do. He did a good customer service activity. Hey, you had a bad experience. I'm sorry. We're going to commit to making it better. Now, he hasn't given you anything yet, but at least he acknowledged and he didn't take any kind of negative approach there. He didn't hide. He didn't, you know, make excuses. He just laid it out there. Okay, so you got that. Then, a day later, you got Stearns in front of the masses, in front of the media, in front of the Wolves with their pitchforks and their sticks. And he took accountability and he laid an off-season focus. He took some of his hits from the media. He was direct. He was honest. I think he was, he came, you know, maybe not hat in hand, but he came with every bit of accountability that you would want from a president of baseball operations that is responsible, regardless of what he delegates throughout his organization, he's responsible for the final product. And he took all the questions. He didn't jump away from any of them. He didn't redirect any of them. If he didn't agree with it, maybe he just, you know, cut it off, but he did what he had to do. And then, and Stearns kind of hinted at it during the press conference and talked about an environment where they need to support the players better, because I think that was one of the things. Everybody heard run prevention, which everybody thinks is defense, but it's pitching and defense. But another thing that he had said during the press conference was an environment where they support the players better. That's the coaches. And then you got the meat on the bone on Friday. And for those who are members, premium members, you heard some of my instant reaction on Friday afternoon. But I know a lot of people are happy that the hitting coaches are gone, Eric Chavez and Jeremy Barnes, despite the fact that the Mets, from expected batting average, which Chavez brought up in his comments to the media, the Mets were one of the top teams in baseball with their expected batting average. If you go to any publicly available website, top five, top six. Some teams I've heard have them much higher, which is interesting. They're a well-respected offense throughout the league. We could debate about that. Some of the secondary coaches, third base coach Mike Sarbaugh, John Gibbons, bench coach, all gone. You know, you saw I don't need to repeat the news. You know the news. The one that's a surprise and maybe a scapegoat is Jeremy Hefner. I heard the walks, and we've been complaining about walks out of this staff now for a couple of years. The bullpen last year, obviously the rotation this year, the walks have been absurd. It looks like Hefner is going to be taking the hit for that. I think he'll get a job again. He's done a lot to bring the Mets pitching from the real criminal activity of the last 20 years, which was Dan Worthen being handed a golden pitching staff in 2012 through 2018, and turning it to dust. And some of that is investment by the front office, but some of that is having somebody who was incapable of modern thought with a pitching staff that, if it had a little bit of modern thought, would have been, it's the ultimate what if, maybe in Mets history. One of the ultimate what ifs, not the ultimate, but one of the ultimate what ifs. And most of those guys either didn't reach capabilities during their tenure, or in the case of DeGrom and even Wheeler, exceeded and excelled after Worthen left. So, you know, Hefner has done a lot here. So you got the point is you got the meat on the bone. And let me tell you something. It's pretty clear. Two things. I'm not going to get into who the next first base coach is or the next hitting coach is. I'm not spending the next 3 weeks with the postseason doing that. I'm not going to do it. That's, if you want to do that, maybe we'll have some conversation here or there. This is not like a managerial search. And to be quite honest, with the way that these analytical modern front offices work, I'm out on understanding how they hire coaches and managers. I'm out. I know the principles that make a good manager. When it comes to impactful personalities in the dugout, they're not interested in Tony La Russa. They're not interested in Davey Johnson. They're not interested in the next Pat Riley or the next Bill Parcells. They're interested in a collaborative extension of the front office, a manager who the only difference between them and somebody that's sitting up in the press box during the game is that they're a front office member that's responsible for interacting directly with the players. It's truly a corporate structure. I'm not complaining about it. I'm not indicting it. It's reality. So anybody who's talking about bringing back a celebrity coach, I've heard names like Willie Randolph, Edgardo Alfonso. Someone even said, what about Tony La Russa as a manager when people wanted Mendoza fired, which we knew is not going to happen. He is on the clock. It's not going to happen. Trust me, none of that's going to happen. Look at John Gibbons. He retired. You know why John Gibbons retired? Because he knew the game was passing him by. The game is passing these guys by. The game is changing. That's the way the world works. And a generation of coaches and managers and baseball personnel that was very viable for a long time is no longer viable. You want to like it, dislike it, it's reality. So that's what we're going to do. Driveline is going to be taking over the pitching with Eric Yeagers, I think, has been playing a big part. Look out for the name Desi Drusil. He was the bullpen coach. I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the mix. I know that he wasn't announced as anything more than, hey, we want him back, but he could go look for another job. I think the AAA coaching staff will get a big look what that is and who that is. I'm not even going to speculate, but think about it. The organization, and our friend Ernie Dove has talked about this for a while, the organization has been pretty clear that they have a philosophy on hitting. They have philosophies on pitching, top to bottom. That's what modern analytic front office have. So whether you're the pitching coach in single A, triple A, or the big leagues, you're all going to be preaching the same thing. So ultimately, hating the coach, and think about what Stearns did. He didn't purge all the holdovers from Epler. And Hefner's been around since way before that. He's been around since Alderson was around, 2020. Since the Wilpons was still around in 2020, right? You know, Brody Van Wagenen. So remember, Hefner's been around a while. But he kept consistency in some aspects, and now he wants all his own people. This is going to be Stearns' show. He's 2 years in. It's going to be his way. And you want to say he's a bullseye on his back. Certainly from a media perspective, they're going to go after him. But he ain't getting fired. He's going to live out this contract. The next person to go is Mendoza if things don't improve. If they make significant moves and they're expected to win next year, it'll be Mendoza that will go. So there you go. That's the way it is. So, you know, that's where it is with the coaches. Not going to get too much deeper than that about that. But now that you got all that, you got the Cohen apology, you've got the Stearns accountability, you got some meat on the bone. The coaches were the first group of individuals the fans really and the media really wanted to, you know, pick at and punish. People lost their jobs. You don't have to worry about Eric Chavez harming you anymore. Now it's fashionable to talk about the clubhouse and play junior psychologist and talk about the core. This has been a media thing since the age of time. Oh, it's a bad core. You lose. Must be a clubhouse thing. Oh, they're not getting along. Oh, they don't like each other. Oh, there is a bad chemistry there. And I understand, and I think we all expected this, post-OMG Grimace, with the kind of season the Mets had, with the kind of characters the Mets had, with the kind of vibe the Mets had in 2024, which, by the way, was a really fun season, but let's not forget they came 2 games short of the World Series. They didn't win a championship. There's no banner. They didn't even win a division. Okay, they are a 9th inning home run from Pete from it being short-circuited pretty quickly. Let's even go further back. They're an 8th inning home run and a big save from Diaz from it never happening and probably going down as big and frustrating as a disappointment as this year. And if Lindor and the Mets don't rally against the Phillies bullpen, who knows if they even hit the Dodgers. And the Dodgers, who, despite people putting their obituary out there throughout the season, are showing you why they're the champ. So let's keep that in mind. So I understand the vibe, but if you want to peel the onion on the vibe, we've talked about this. We talked about this last year. Very similar team. Okay? So what's going to be fashionable is ripping apart the core, looking at every player in the core. And who's the core? That's Alonso, that's Lindor, that's Soto, that's Nimmo, and I'll throw in Diaz. Those are the 5 really main key core guys. Those are your stars. Now, everybody else is either a burgeoning star. Maybe you talk about Alvarez and Beatty, a complimentary player, your McNeils, your Tyrone Taylors, your setup guys. And when you talk about the pitching, there's no core stars there. There's no ace. Those are all solid to mid to back end of the rotation arms. I mean, that's the that's what you had. And you had a couple of them not even perform like that. That's why you're in the position that you're in. And guess what? You know, the first thing everybody's going to say, over $300 million payroll. The core is the problem. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to look at the core real quick, and I'm going to give you a reality check about what happens if the core doesn't come back. What happens if Alonso doesn't come back? Because right away, everybody, he's a terrible first baseman. All right, you know, didn't have a banner year defensively at first. Not the first position I really worry about with the glove. And analytics has talked about that in the past. So all of a sudden now, first base is, you know, you got to be Ozzie Smith to play first base. Would like a good first baseman. But, you know, you start ripping away at this core just to rip away at it, to change the deck chairs here. You'd be surprised at what happens. Now, I came up, and there's probably already a stat. I'm not doing anything genius here. I came up with a Talking Mets back of the paper bag stat. So we'll share that in a minute. And I'm going to tell you where maybe the offense, as good as it was this year, I think my analysis will show you maybe where the problem lies with the offense. And the solution, or the solution that's being talked about, because we need to have a better clubhouse. And what's even more laughable is like Lindor and Soto are the next A-Rod and Jeter. I saw that floating around with some dopey report from some rando host in WFAN. These are all clickbait recycled stories. Remember, when you have a media, especially the ones that are the big names in media that grew up in the 90s with George Steinbrenner drama, with New York sports drama, pre-analytics, all they know is Page Six gossip reporting. They don't know it, and that's all they know how to track, because right now, everything's been even out. The only reason the New York Post or an ESPN gets more eyeballs than maybe a real thought-out piece from a independent publication is because they have the reach. It's like Walmart. They have the name that's been established over years. They have the money. So by natural attrition, it's just going to show up. And because you write for them, you have credibility. In a vacuum, you look at some of the writing from some of the big names versus some of the people. And I'll be honest with the way I'm breaking down the team, nobody's doing it the intelligent way. Because in a lot of ways, their editors are going to say, well, that's not going to sell. I need a salacious headline. I need to tell the public that it's Soto versus Lindor. And some of that has to do with the fact that they're responsible, unlike I am, to pull in the casual fan that's really not going to sit here and talk about the Mets' payroll. Because once the season's over, they're out. They're moving on to the next thing. So here's the deal with the core. Not only is the core difficult to trade, you don't want to break it up. And that includes Alonso. And I know Alonso's a complicated situation, and I know that there's no guarantee he's coming back. But I'd be real careful about just walking away from Alonso. And I've already kind of teased a little bit of that throughout the week on X, and I might have mentioned it a little bit on last week's show. So last year, you have Lindor. Let's look at that core. Let's just look. Lindor is a 10-5 guy off the bat. So this idea to put him out, like Licata at on Baseball Night in New York has talked about, the idea to put him out there, it's very difficult. Now, would Lindor agree to a trade somewhere as a 10-5 guy? Very difficult. So he's pretty much got a full no-trade clause. Since he joined the Mets, just put it in perspective, since 2021, got the big contract, one that I criticized and was concerned about. He's fourth in wins above replacement. He's eighth in runs scored. By the way, with Soto, they were top five in runs scored last year. Tons of runs being scored by those two guys. 17th in runs batted in. And in run creation, he's just outside of the top 30. Some of that probably has to do with two things. Being in the leadoff spot, sometimes you're more of a creator, like starting the whole action, maybe not involved in every run. But I also think his poor 2021 played into that. I think he has a better 2021 from the start. He probably is in there. I mean, because even with run creation, you're factoring in runs scored. I mean, when he wasn't getting on base early in his tenure, he probably is at that point. So, best shortstop in baseball. Maybe you want to argue as he gets older, Trey Turner's there. I know defensively he had a clumsy year. The range is still there. I don't see, even as he hits his mid-30s, that he is going to, he's in his later prime. He's starting his later prime. Can you see a decline? I could probably see that. Not the best arm, but the range is there. He's a smart shortstop. Catch the ball. I mean, at this point, his miscues are misjudging line drives, dropping throws, clumsy plays that are not an indicative of age. It's just clumsy plays. Like, sometimes you have a bad year. Now, we'll keep an eye on it, but I have no concerns with Lindor at shortstop. And as a matter of fact, most that you put in there are going to be a downgrade. And it's a premium position and an important position. So there you go. And the fact that he's still up there in wins above replacement tells you that the industry, from an analytics standpoint, still values his defense, because it's not just because of his offense. Soto, different story. Soto, when you start to look at Soto here and you go to 2025, just 2025 here, and let's bring him up a little bit. You've got a guy that is, and I'm going to put him up right here. Let's bring him up right here. Here's a guy that top five in run creation. Okay. One of the top RBI guys in the sport at this point. Since he, came into play here, he's been a top five. I mean, we're talking about all time. You're putting him up with Hank Aaron's and the Mantles and Ted Williams and all that. That's why he was signed. And you saw in the second half, when he finally got comfortable, the kind of impact hitter that he is. Now, some people don't like him because he doesn't smile and he doesn't have a personality like Lindor, and he's not rah-rah and goofy like Pete. And in New York, we just don't like a guy that quite honestly just wants to go to the ballpark, put his work in, put a good effort in, and go home. He's not into the extracurricular things. He's not into the photographs in the dugout. He had to kind of be pushed into that. And it's been reported he's very businesslike. And sometimes that's been construed as not caring. That's not the case. Or he's not happy. Hey, look, there are a lot of people that I think you know in your lines of work and in your life that are like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't mean they don't care. They just want to get the job done. Give me guys like that, you'll win a championship. You won't market the sport a lot. You won't get a lot of fun fan moments. You won't have a cartoon character name like certain pitchers that have had cartoon character names here. But you give me that and you hit like Ted Williams or some combination of Hank Aaron, Ted Williams, Mickey Mantle. You know, maybe he could prove the defense. He improved and he's added stolen bases to his repertoire. I mean, he was nearly a 40-40 guy. Don't grow on trees, guys, these players. They don't grow on trees. So there you go. And you got him. You got him for 15 years. You got him for more than a decade. He's going to go down as one of the greatest Mets of all time if he stays healthy. And I believe he will. And I'm not even going to get into Alonso. I'll end up with Alonso. But Nimmo, I understand he's not the same player. He was a top 15 run creator that got him a big contract in 2022. He's not that player. But he's still, and I would compare him to later career Paul O'Neill, Tino Martinez. He drives in 90 runs. He hits you about 20 to 25 home runs. He's definitely a strong voice, calming voice, leadership voice in that clubhouse. He's been with the organization now since 2011 when he was drafted, the first draft pick in Alderson's tenure. He has a reasonable contract at $20 million a year. Let's remember that. Very reasonable contract for $20 million a year. And, you know, a guy like that, who also has a full no-trade clause, quite honestly, trading him, and I know a lot of it has to do with, and the concerns are valid, the herniated discs in the neck, the lower extremities getting gimpy with the plantar fasciitis, the defense, I think his range is fine, but when you really look at it, it's his arm that's the issue. I think that the gimpiness is contributing maybe a little bit to, you know, not having the same impact from a range perspective in the field. But he also plays a corner. And for a corner outfielder, that's passable. Now, in center field, and I know they asked him a little bit this year, I think those days are over. But he's passable. And I don't think, and you look at his more modern day post-run creator, elite run creator, Nimmo. Nimmo got the contract. And he was kind of like a Cody Bellinger type. Cody Bellinger's a guy that you look at the numbers, doesn't pop off the page necessarily, but he's versatile. He plays great defense. So he's always going to fare well in these war converted to dollar scenarios. But last year, Nimmo's season was worth $24 million. He got paid $20. He's earning his keep. He's not the problem. He may not be the run creator, elite run creator that got him that contract. He's still very, very, very solid. And then you come to the fourth offensive piece, and it's Pete Alonso. And Pete, we all know what happened last winter. We all know the questions we had. And I understand the concerns on defense. But since he came into the league, he's second in home runs. He's got the most RBIs in baseball. And he's 18th in run creation. And he's top 10 as a right-handed batter. As a run creator, as a right-handed batter, he was third in baseball last year. Now, we'll see what the market dictates. I think Pete is intent on getting respect. He brought it up in the post-game comments that he made. I know it bothered you less than an hour after the team was eliminated, but Pete had a chip on his shoulder this year. He proved himself offensively. He is setting career highs in most secondary metrics if you go to Baseball Savant. He's hitting the ball hard. He's not fishing as much. I don't think he's the kind of guy that if you give him a 5 or 6 year deal, and he's going to get a 6 year deal with an AAV of $30 million a year. He's just going to. It's going to happen if the Mets are like, hey, he's not worth it and he's going to age poorly. Now, I know he was worth $29 million this year, according to Fangraphs or thereabouts. That's about his value. I know you're paying him into his mid to late 30s. I know that, you know, it's already out there that he probably doesn't want a DH. That attitude could change as he gets older. As you know, and look, Pete's the kind of guy, if I wanted to bet, if I went to him and gave him a six-year, $180 million deal, if I was Cohen, and if I was Stearns, I say, hey, Pete, here's the thing I need you to do this offseason. Continue to bottle whatever you did offensively. I need you to bottle some of that work you did on offense, on defense. Not expect you to be a Gold Glover. He's also not Dick Stewart. And if you guys don't know who Dick Stewart is, look him up. But can you come and be more towards average? Even if he's still below average, more towards passable. Still, I understand people cite the scoops and they try to say he's not that good in scoops. My eyes tell a different story, especially on an infield where their shortstop doesn't have a great arm. Now, you eliminate Pete. Maybe they don't have a choice. Maybe he doesn't want to be here, and maybe somebody blows him away with something really stupid that the Mets say, hey, I can't do it. Maybe. I don't see that happening, maybe. And I think when push comes to shove, walking away from here, where he's Pete Alonso with a personality, is a whole different thing. But you let him walk the door. I don't know where you're getting your right-handed impact offense. You might have to go component-driven right-handed because all your impactful hitters, and I know Lindor's a switch hitter, but he'll mainly bat lefty. Majority of the pitchers are righty. Anybody that you could replace Pete with, Kyle Tucker, Kyle Schwarber, lefty. You want to bring in Alex Bregman and say, okay, put him at third base, put Vientos at first base, trade Beatty? Well, guess what? Alex Bregman is not the offensive player that Pete Alonso is. You're talking about a top three right-handed batter this past year. And yes, Aaron Judge had a full season and didn't have as many injuries. He probably would be on the RBI list ahead of Pete Alonso. 100 RBI season, combination of some of the time he missed since 2019. He missed some time. You know, and he also had the COVID shortened season. He's probably ahead. But the fact that we're talking about Pete in the same breath as Aaron Judge, and when you look at their numbers, Aaron Judge is a far better hitter. Gets on base more. He's got a much higher walk rate. Hits for a higher average. The guy's a batting title guy. But that's a big difference. That's a wide gap. But when it comes to power and driving runners in, they ain't that far off. They ain't that far off. Now, I'm not suggesting he's Aaron Judge, but if Juan Soto was going to leave Aaron Judge, which he did, and he lands at Pete Alonso as his right-handed protection, it's not a bad place to land. Not many other players out there that could do that. Look at the Dodgers. I know they have Ohtani and they have Freeman, but they also have Will Smith and they also have Mookie Betts. They have some good right-handed bats. You cannot have an all left-handed lineup. I mean, and yeah, and Pete didn't hit great against lefties this year, so maybe that, you know, you could point that out, but I think personally that might be a bit of an anomaly. So I haven't even gotten to Diaz. Because I'll put him to the side, and I think he's going to come back. But Diaz is an easy one. Diaz is complicated on the contract because how he's going to age. But right now, this is a guy that is, you know, since he came to the Mets, misses bats at a greater rate than anybody, you know, a top 10 closer, probably top 2 or 3 when he's healthy, went through a couple of gauntlets during his time in New York, one when he first came here, and then the second one after he came back from missing a year. And if those things were more normalized, I think there'd be no debate that not only is he the best closer in Mets history, because he is, he would arguably be the best closer in the sport. You know, not Mariano, nobody's Mariano, but this guy is the Mets' best closer in their history and is about as automatic as you're going to get in the ninth inning. And as he gets older, I think he gets better. And I think he'll be back. But let's go back to where the main point is here. And the main point is that you want to rip away from a core. And I'll just put it in perspective. Mets had a top 5 or 6 offense by expected statistics. Some teams, like I said, I've heard have them rated higher. If you look at my silly little metric here, which is pretty simple, it's called real runs, which you basically take the runs scored and the RBIs, and you subtract the home runs. Because the home runs get, you know, the home runs and the RBIs are redundant. So you have your runs, then you have your home runs minus your RBIs, and you add them all together, and that's your real runs. So runs that you were involved in. Because the home run is repeated. The home run is okay to repeat it with a run, because you're scoring yourself, but it gets repeated with the RBI because the home run itself. So you don't need the home run in the RBI equation. You need it in the run equation. So you leave the runs clean. You do RBIs minus home runs. You add them together, and there you go. You have what the real runs are. The four core players I brought up using that metric, and maybe there's one out there that Fangraphs has. I don't care. I just did this sitting here writing on like the old back of the paper bag math. And guess what? They're 88% of the offense. 88% of the offense. When Pete walks out that door, if he walks out that door, you're losing 23% of your offense overnight. Impactful. 120 RBIs, game-breaking home runs, game-winning home runs, protection for Soto, who, oh, by the way, is already walking at an historically high rate in Mets history. Most walks in Mets history. Most walks in Mets history. Pete walks out the door. Mark Vientos is not replaced. Sorry. A poor man's Mark Vientos is not replacing that. And you want to look at Soto from, I don't see if I can put up potential walks here. Yeah, he had 13 this year, which was not a career high, but he only had, you know, two with his time with the Yankees. Now, he was batting in front of Judge, so increase that by another. You know, look at the 2021 Nats who didn't have a lot of protection for Soto. He'll probably have 25 intentional walks. They'll be taking the bat out of his hand a lot without Pete there. You got yourself a dilemma. So while you guys are all talking about ripping the core up and changing the deck chairs here, you better make sure that when you do that, A, the player coming in has that ability to be impactful. Now, Kyle Schwarber, from a power and perspective of RBIs, he'll be able to make up some of that. He's also lefty, and he's also a DH that's, you know, going to clog up that position. I don't think you're going to find a shortstop that necessarily brings what Lindor brings. Forget about Soto. He's not going anywhere anyway. The closer situation, you know, you want to say, and we'll get deeper into this conversation another day, that there's some options like an Iglesias or, you know, you could move. I don't think it'll happen. Clay Holmes back to the closer position. Maybe the Royals trade Carlos Estevez. I've seen some proposal. Joel Sherman said maybe you could trade McNeil there for Estevez. You know, something like that. Maybe. I mean, that could happen, but doesn't mean it's going to make the ninth inning better, and it's certainly not going to be automatic. Let's watch the postseason and watch. Look at Luke Weaver and the Yankees, how bullpens undo you. Games are won and lost in the bullpen. They just are. And if you have a guy like Diaz, you don't walk away from it. Now, you want to say Nimmo is the most replaceable, then that gets into exactly what you don't want, which is ripping apart the quote-unquote good clubhouse. He was part of the vibe last year, right? And he had a terrible second half. And when you look, and so, you know, just before you throw away, you know, late career Paul Neal, Tino Martinez type, is some value. So when you look at all this, though, the fact that these guys are 88% of your offense, when they slumped and Pete and Lindor slumped badly in July, the team is going to struggle. The real issue is what you got around them. They didn't contribute enough. By the way, you talk about payroll, and I'll give you something that'll probably, you probably know this, but maybe you need to be reminded. Those guys earn their keep. Those guys earn their salaries. You know who didn't? And look, it's not his fault. He's injured. He was paid for what he did in 2022, and you thought he'd last a little longer. You got Starling Marte making nearly $21 million. He was a solid backup, but he's a guy that should be making $5, $6, $7 million, and that's what Fangraphs has him at. You got nothing out of Sean Manaea at $20 million. You got nothing out of Frankie Montas at $17 million. A.J. Minter got hurt, $11 million. You have about, Jesse Winker, $7.5 million. Nothing. Back went out. You have $75 million of payroll that went to those guys, and I'm not arguing because I liked all those moves. All those moves were fine. I didn't criticize them in February when they reported to camp. But that's where the season ended. You didn't get the component-driven performance. You didn't get the bullpen until you made some trades, and it got better. But it didn't do what you wanted to because of Helsley. And you got very little out of the rotation, a big downgrade in the rotation. And what's funny is if I had to take a guess, Montas smells like an analytics department. It's not hard to tell. Acquisition. The people that probably push for that, which if I had a guess, and I don't know this, the Jaegers of the world and the lab, they're not getting fired. Unless it was Jeremy Hefner, and I don't think so. Be surprised. Look at Zach Scott's tweet. It was ominous. He's like, did they fire the guy that pounded his hand on the table and said, give me Montas? Now, maybe that was just a little, you know, kind of, hey, you know, let's think about that. Maybe he knows more. So we'll see. So the problem is not the core. So before you start playing junior side, let's rip up the core and let's feel good about it. Let's throw Nimmo to the wolves. Hard. Money makes it hard. No trades make it hard. And by the way, that's your offense right now. Because you don't know what Alvarez is going to give you. You don't know what Beatty's going to give you. You don't know how you're going to get more offense out of center field without sacrificing defense. You don't know how you're going to get more offense out of second base while also improving the defense if McNeil goes. You don't know. And we haven't even talked about the DH spot. How can that be better, contribute to the offense? And maybe that's the key, because they like to keep it open, but maybe you need to find your bat there and sacrifice some offense up the middle in center field and second. And we haven't even brought up, hey, if and when Benj, Jet, or the few positional prospects that are close, when will they be ready and can they provide an impact in the same manner that Enola McLain did and to a lesser degree Sproat and Tong in their short time? So that's where you're at with the core. So be real careful. Be real careful about how quickly you want to rip this apart. Be real careful about how quickly you want to throw any of these guys out, whether it be for defense, BS leadership talk that's meant to just create clicks or make you feel good because you're angry. Be careful, because that's 88% of your offense right now, and any piece of it goes out the door or gets injured or even significantly declines, and that's a bigger, there's nothing we can do about that. They're already in there. Some of those guys are in their 30s. Lindor's in his 30s. Nimmo's in his 30s. Pete's in his 30s. The only one that's in early prime is Soto. So this is not 07 where it's Reyes and Wright in their early prime. It's Soto and three older vets that now you have to hope, as they get older and eventually decline, hopefully not for another 3 years, at least, that you have somebody on the back end replacing them. Now, whether that comes through an acquisition this winter, next winter, or through the farm system will remain to be seen. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, we're going to quickly go through the 40-man roster, do a little stay go, and I'll be doing some mailbag. Still plenty more to come here on this edition of the Talking Mets podcast, our first off-season edition of the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. So, hey, look, we're off and running here in the off-season. We got core talk. We got a Talking Mets back of the paper bag math. Stat. We're talking about free agency. We're breaking down stats as only we do. Look, we're not data scientists here. We're not going to be in the pitching lab. We're not going to be doing any kind of high-level analysis for Baseball Prospectus or Fangraphs. But we could actually take numbers and use some common sense behind it. That's what we try to do here and make it fun and digestible for the listener. So that's where we're at. So we talked about the core, and as promised, this week is going to be about the current roster and setting the stage. We'll get into free agents and possibilities, and it's going to develop. It's going to be longer. One of the things I always do every year in October is I say, okay, where would I like to see the front office go? And last year was, okay, Soto, it's the offseason of Soto. The year before it was maybe going to be, or a couple of years ago, it was going to be the offseason of Ohtani, and that didn't happen. Because Ohtani obviously, you know, went to the Dodgers. It wasn't an option. But let's look at the roster, because right now that's where this thing is all set up. And you know it's that time of the year because I have my spreadsheet out like I have every year, and I put the Mets, you know, 40-man roster, who's a free agent. You know, obviously I had the guys back in that were on the 60-man that didn't count, because now once the offseason starts, you got to get this down to under 40 or 40 or under. You can't have more than 40 on your roster during the offseason. You can't stash. You can't put 60-day IL guys on there. They're going to have to be, you know, accounted for, you know, whether they're viable or not. That's where if they're arbitration eligible and don't have a contract, you have to tender them a contract and so on and so forth. So anyway, right now the Mets, and I am not counting Diaz right now because we don't know if Diaz is going to opt out. But the Mets have 9 free agents. And I put Pete Alonso in there because he's going to opt out. So right now they have 9 free agents. And they have Griffin Canning, Ryan Helsley, Tyler Rogers, Gregory Soto, Ryan Stanek, Pete Alonso, Starling Marte, Cedric Mullins, and Jesse Winker. So off the bat, once the season ends, the Mets roster goes from currently 48 players down to 39. Maybe 38. If Diaz opts out. Now, there's 2 club options on here. Let's keep that in mind. And I'll get to some of the stay and go. The 2 club options are Brooks Raley and Drew Smith. I think Raley is an easy one. Drew Smith, we don't know much about his rehab, but with the way that the bullpen needs some help, and he was an impactful arm when he was healthy at times, no Reed Garrett, because he's going to probably need Tommy John surgery. He might be a guy that could take the place of like a Reed Garrett, getting some, you know, outs early, maybe providing some seventh inning work. We'll see. But I don't know what his status is health-wise, so I don't know if they could pick up the club option. So I think Raley definitely gets picked up. So let's say you go from, you know, 48, 9 free agents, and, you know, you got, let's see here, you got Diaz, let's say Diaz opts out. Montas, Frankie Montas and AJ Minter, they have opt-ins. They're going to opt in. I can't see 2 injured guys who will not get a big contract in the market, and especially AJ Minter with the $11 million, Montas with the $17 million. They will opt in. Diaz, let's see. And then you have guys with options. Minors might have 6 more to move throughout the offseason. So that's a whole other situation. We'll get to that. But right now, with the 9 free agents, let's say they pick up 2 club options. So that's 1 that brings it down to 40. Let's see. So 9 free agents down to 39. 2 club options. Those bring you down to 37. So 37 with the 2 club options. Right now, they're not necessarily on the roster. Diaz is 36. Okay. And Montas and Minter opt in. So when it brings it down, you basically are going to have your 40. Your 40 right now. You have your 2 opt-ins in Minter and Montas. Maybe you pick up the 2 club options with Raley and Smith. And then the rest are guys that are on your roster. Now, out of that, you have some ARB guys. You have your Reed Garretts. You have your Kranichs. You have your McGills. You have your Petersons. Danny Young. Alvarez. Torrens. Actually, Nick Madrigal. So you're really just at 40 once the offseason starts, and now you're going to need to make some room. So what does that look like now? So what do you, what are we going to look at here top line? I'm not going to get too deep into it, but let's look at a top line. So I'd like them to re-sign Tyler Rogers and maybe Gregory Soto. I think Minter's, I think you need lefties. I know Soto's not good against righties. I don't know what kind of contract he would require. I don't think it would be a multi-year deal. I think Tyler Rogers is an underrated reliever. I think he's going to be highly sought out on the market. I think he's going to get a 3-year deal. And I'll get deeper into this stuff, but I'd like them to re-sign Tyler Rogers. I like the look that he gives them out of that bullpen, the weak contact, and I think he could stabilize a game out of the bullpen. And the fact that they've been so prone to walks and the league is so prone to walks. We talked about Alonso. That's going to be this season's Soto, I believe, in the sense where they're going to have to figure out. He's not going to sign early. I can't see him signing before December in the winter meetings. And things are going to be happening. So the Mets are going to have to kind of play that and see how they can work with their current, building their current roster and also leaving themselves some safety net in case Pete decides to leave. Helsley is certainly one that everybody can't wait to see go. I think the Mets are going to need a second closer. There are some guys on the market that we'll talk about. Iglesias, Atlanta's closer. Kenley Jansen. I think the Mets need to bring in somebody that can't necessarily get a big contract closing. And I don't know if Helsley is one that can't necessarily get it. He might, on a second division club, get a chance to close, kind of like you saw with when Aroldis Chapman came in. They weren't a second division club, but they weren't sure where the Red Sox were going, where he came in and he knew he had a shot to close. You're not going to sign to be a setup guy, kind of like what David Robertson did when Diaz was the closer a couple of years ago, later in his career, if you want to get a big contract. So if you come in, sign for 1 year to be a setup guy to Diaz, knowing Diaz is going to be there and get the bulk of the save chances, it's going to hurt your market. So will a veteran like a Jansen or Iglesias, or somebody that has already established themselves, made some money, maybe wanted to spend 1 year reestablishing themselves and not get and their opportunity to get big closer money is not there, or at least multi-year closer money. Does Helsley fall into that? I don't know. I wouldn't just throw him to the Wolves. I'd see. There is some metrics that are concerning. They were there when he came over with the left-handed batters, the tipping, we know about that, and things like that. So if not Helsley, what other backup closer can they sign? I'm considering, and I think they should consider, Griffin Canning. He's going to be out probably at least half the year till the All-Star break with the tendon injury. And I think he could provide depth on starting pitching and a swingman. Obviously, you have to give him a multi-year deal. I think that's where the Mets would go. They've worked on him in the lab. He had a good experience here with the lab. I would think he'd want to continue that, because if he does and he signs a short-term deal, he's still young enough where coming out of this in another year could potentially get him a decent contract either from the Mets or somebody else. I think it's time, obviously, to move away from Ryan Stanek. That's not something that's a big aha moment. I know everybody loves Jesse Winker's vibes. Guy's got serious back issues, not the first time. I think he's done. If you want to bring him in on a non-guaranteed contract to spring training to show he's got something left, I'm fine with that. But party's over there. He's going to have to earn a roster spot. Cedric Mullins, I don't think we have any interest in going down that route. And look, Starling Marte had a really good, you know, veteran, late career veteran season off the bench, provided some offense, but he is not the player that he once was. Mets signed to be, you know, really in 2022, he was a core player. I mean, one of the best years of his career, decent right fielder, decent arm, had pop from the right side, didn't steal as many bases as you expected because that was when his health was starting to deteriorate. But I just don't see on this roster, especially with them trying to get more athletic, getting more defensive-oriented. The versatility's not there with Marte anymore. I think he's a goner. He was a decent Met, spent a good chunk of his contract injured, but when he was healthy, he was very impactful, especially in 2022. Arbitration eligible and tender a contract. I don't think they'll tender Garrett a contract. I don't think that Kranick will be tendered a contract. I don't know if Danny Young will be, and I think the big decision here is Tyler McGill. I mean, again, if you tender them a contract and on the 40-man, sure, you could move them to the 60-man roster if they, you know, once the season starts, and then you could add yourself a spot on the 40-man. But, you know, it will clog up during the offseason, the 40-man. And maybe, maybe they have different plans. I know McGill is a guy that has always tantalized with his stuff, but he's going to be out all next year. Treat him the same way you treated like a Danny Young and a Brooks Raley. Get healthy, and then we'll do a tryout, and maybe there'll be an opportunity for you down the road. I don't see him being tendered a contract. Ironically enough, I know he never got off the mat with the Mets, but I think Nick Madrigal, contact guy, versatile backup infielder, maybe one because he's still got control, team control, to tender a contract. And then you got Taylor, Alvarez, Peterson, and Torrens. I think those are pretty easy at this point. So, you know, that's really where your roster is right now. As far as who were potential trade targets, I think McNeil for sure. I think Vientos' days are numbered. I know people are still going to say, look at what he did in 2024. He's a fastball hitter. He has no value outside of his bat. I'm not sure that he could handle breaking pitches consistently. And I think at this point, if he could be part of a bigger package, because the power is legit, and I think teams, he can't be a core member of the package. If he could be part of a larger package to bring a top of the rotation starter in, I'd consider it. I think he's a goner. I think McNeil is somebody with his versatility, still has a decent bat, not the hitter that he was when he came up. He's not Daniel Murphy. He's not Pete Rose. He's somewhere, you know, a solid 750 OPS, versatile infielder, outfielder, plays a little center, has value. You know, perhaps the Mets can include him in some kind of deal, and we'll see what they could get out of that, you know, at this point. So I think that that would be someone also that you could take a look at. But by and large, there's your 40-man roster. And right now, it's not like, you know, outside of maybe, a, you know, and I'll put this, Alvarez and Beatty, I don't see them getting traded. I think Alvarez and the power is too tantalizing. He had a really good second act outside of Syracuse. Beatty, I think not having him those final games in Miami hurt them. I know that this will probably not sit well with some of the fans, but to me, Beatty's very Eric Chavez-like when Eric Chavez was with Oakland. So to me, that's kind of the player he is. That's a solid player. Plays a little good defense, has a little bit of pop. Maybe doesn't get on base at the level that Chavez did, and I think he strikes out a little bit too much. Maybe those are things he could work on a little bit, but he showed you know, progress. Doesn't necessarily hit lefties. You might not need to have some kind of you know, righty complement there, but that comes with time. I mean, Brandon Nimmo didn't hit lefties early in his career, and he learned. At some point, you have to accept those deficiencies, maybe have some backup on that. And, you know, Ronnie Mauricio, I think definitely could be somebody that will be put in a trade. I think his talent is something that's going to make them pause about trading him. I agree with Keith Hernandez. Both he and Acuna are going to need winter ball, but I'm not sure either one shows me they could be impactful. I think Acuna still, to me, profiles as a backup, a versatile backup. There's value there. And Mauricio is a guy that I think is always going to tease you. Good body, good talent. Not sure he has the ability to mentally understand the game, recognize off-speed pitches, learn how to play and be instinctual. I think all of those things are hard to teach. And he just profiles as a guy that's always going to annoy you. He's going to do something fundamentally bad. He's going to be subject to trouble hitting the curve, quote-unquote. Good glove, good body, you know, definitely a defensive player that, you know, could I think we've seen it. He made some plays at third that even Beatty I wouldn't see make that last weekend of the season. But you need more than just that. And I think Beatty is a guy that is, you know, with the payroll being what it is, and the Mets maybe shopping in some of the deep ends of the pool here, I think Beatty's going to get the chance to be the third baseman. Alvarez is going to be the catcher. And if they're going to upgrade the roster, they'll keep Taylor around. You know, I think they would tender him a contract, keep him in center, at least as a backup, as a fourth outfielder, because he's not Harrison Bader, but defensively he's not too far off. And then they're going to have to figure out McNeil and trading McNeil on second base. So, you know, there's your roster at this point. You know, there's you know, your roster's pretty much off the bat, you know, with the opt-ins of Minter, bringing back Raley and Drew Smith, you know, and pretty much the rest of the 40-man, you know, you're there. You got your 40. You got, you know, you got your club options, you got your opt-ins. You know, if Diaz opts in, you're actually at, yeah, exactly 40. If Diaz opt out, you're at 39. And then you're going to have to figure out. Now, there's a bunch of guys here that, you know, are fungible. Justin Hageman, Jonathan Pintaro, Waddell, Austin Warren, Alex Carrillo. Hayden Singer, who I think in an organization that has, you know, catching depth issues, I wouldn't just throw him away. He's your catching depth. I know with the ABS system, that's going to change a little bit where you might not need as much framing, although I think, and I do believe that this will be the case, a pitcher feeling comfortable with how a catcher receives the ball, even though the framing could be mitigated by the ABS, is still important. You got Torrens, you got Alvarez. You're going to want more offense from the position now because I think there'll be a less of an emphasis on defense. It'll be about arm throwing out runners and offense and game calling and less about framing. So that's where a Senger, who is he's actually a good catch and throw guy, not just framing, good catch and throw guy. The bat's just awful, but that's a guy that'll provide you depth and, you know, in a pinch could be a decent backup, especially if you have a less than desirable defensive catcher, maybe a late inning backup at some point. Although the Mets are lucky, they have both Torrens and Alvarez, who are solid there at that point. So that's an early look at the 40-man. We'll continue to go deeper on that as the offseason goes and micro-focus on parts of the roster and players. But I wanted to get started with the 40-man and where I was looking at it. And, you know, obviously you're about 39-40, depending on what Diaz does. And you heard my focus and who I'd like to bring back. Not many, but there are a few interesting names there. And for most of the tender contracts, you know, I told you I'd like to, you know, not tender contracts there too. So we'll see. All right, let's take a quick break. When we wrap up, we'll do some mailbag and then wrap up right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts and mailbag. And we're going to be trying to make this a bigger part of the show. I can't promise every week, but if you send me comments, I'm going to worm it into something. So how do you send a comment? You could comment on a post if you're a premium subscriber over at Beyond the Mic. You can send me an email, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. If you don't want to send me an email directly, if you go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com and go to the contact form, you could go there and it'll come to me. So, and I do check the junk because with all this stuff, I've been getting junk mail. And I apologize. Some of you, for some reason, got put to junk for no reason. So I put you as a trusted sender. Some new names here, some repeat names. And obviously, and I haven't put up because I did this early, I'm going to start putting up a chat thread for comments for the show. And then you could just dump it in there as well. So we'll round up the last 10 minutes or so reading some of the fans' comments here. And it could be anything. Look, you want to say, Mike, you're wrong. Mike, you need to, you know, modernize. It's all there. Our friend Ben wrote to me, much needed change. He wanted to comment on the coaching purge. The Mets needed to modernize their coaching staff. Chavez's text messages to beat reporters today were not surprising. What Ben's talking about is the two-hitting coach situation. Given how he views baseball, but it's still very concerning. Chavez also talked about expected batting average and how there's some, you know, he didn't buy into it as much. Chavez was a well below average hitting coach that thinks too old school. The game has evolved a lot and he hasn't with it. Him saying he doesn't care about expected stats has me shaking my head. Expected stats are there to show that if the hitter has a good approach to certain pitches, the best analytical organizations value this. I don't think people losing their job. I don't like people losing their jobs with that being said. That's a fair point. He had to go. He's stuck in the Stone Age. He has no coaching experience prior to becoming the Mets hitting coach in the 2021 offseason. Strange hire in real time. He spent more time arguing with Mets fans on social media, making cryptic posts, than learning about the importance of analytics. Good riddance. Hefner is a much better coach than Chavez. I'll give him that. I don't think it's a bad thing to move on from him. It's been 6 years since he's been here. The message might have been getting stale. The pitching is falling apart. Has fallen apart. In 20, 21, 23, 25 under his watch. I think he's a good coach, but not elite like fans and media think. Ben, all of this is fair. And geez, you know, sometimes reading the long emails, I get tongue-tied. My mind and my words kind of go blah, blah, like that. Can't disagree. My point during the season was always I thought the hitting coaches are a little overrated. From what I was told, it was more about their work with the younger players than the vets. You heard in the opening how the vets performed this year in terms of their production. And maybe where the hitting coaches failed was that with 88% of the offense coming from the core four offensive players and the lack of contribution, the fact that both Alvarez and Beatty had to be sent down at certain points. Alvarez more for performance. Beatty was a numbers game. But if he was performing very well and he got off to a slow start from the jump, he might never have been sent down. As far as Chavez and no coaching experience, if you read Andy Martino's book, the Yankees highly regarded him. I think he was in their front office. So he had some. And I think they hired him because he needed a promotion and they got the hitting coach promotion to hire him away from the Yankees. He was somebody that the Yankees, as a former player, they thought he was a solid hire. And Martino talked about that. And he came with a good recommendation from an organization that honestly has been cited, the Dodgers and the Yankees, especially with some of their work in analytics before the Mets, as the gold standard. And, Hefner. Here's what I would say about Hefner. I don't disagree with anything you said, Ben. My concern is I'm not so sure driveline is the answer. But the Mets are going, and I will tell you, that's a fact. I was asking around. Mets are going all Driveline, not just because Yeager's is there. I mean, they've been moving towards Driveline. Now, Driveline might give you good pitch shaping and increase your spin. Is it going to keep these guys healthy? Probably not. Is it important to have diversified opinion and, you know, maybe a little bit of old school in the mix? Maybe Chavez would have been better as a bench coach. That's what he was under Buck. I think year two. I think ultimately Chavez is, and from what it sounds like, he was too direct and he had no filter. I heard something that said he had very little filter, and that sometimes bothers people. Sometimes you got to need to know how to say things. That's some information that I got. That, you know, sometimes he would say things that came across in a way where the message wasn't received. So at that point, you're right. He's got to go. Hefner, no problem what you said. I worry about the Driveline situation. I worry about it a lot. So, this is a long one. Our friend Sal here. First, thank you very much, Sal, for listening. He's been listening for 4 years. And he uses the term in the email, mental bubblegum. That's what we like to do here at the Talking Mets podcast. We like to, you know, call this a mental bubblegum, especially in the off season where you're not getting your baseball fix. So, Sal listened to David Stern's end of the year press conference, and he wants to talk about run prevention, and he's got some thoughts. His first thought is moving Lindor to third base. Feels he lost a half a step on his field looking at the eye test. The move of Lindor to third base would give the Mets a player that could hit 30 home runs there, have some speed at a corner position, solve the problem because third base has been a black hole with the exception of a David Wright and for a little bit of time, Howard Johnson. And he brings up how Javi Baez, his buddy, an elite defensive player, has moved around the diamond. It's not, look, at some point as Lindor declines, he probably will have to consider moving positions. Unlike Derek Jeter, who would not move from shortstop even when he declined. The Yankees thought about moving him to center field. They thought he could play well in center field. He didn't want to do it. I'm not sure, Sal, that third base, especially with Beatty now, and I think that Beatty has shown enough where I feel comfortable with them going with him at third base going into the season. With Beatty there, you're blocking him. And I know you bring up Beatty, I believe, later I believe you bring Beatty up somewhat later in this email, but I'll see. I thought I saw Brett Beatty's name. But Beatty to me at third. I'm not ready to move Lindor off of short. I think he's too valuable there. I still like his range. I think, like I said, my opinion, and again, this is anecdotal, it was clumsy errors, not errors that showed declining skills. But I appreciate your creativity. I think also the Mets historically have gotten in trouble moving people around. Howard Johnson in center, Juan Samuel in center, Greg Jeffries all over the place. So keep that in mind. Jose Reyes at second. You know the deal. So sometimes there's a little PTSD from Mets fans here. Second point from Sal. Jet Williams starts at shortstop and Carson Benj in center. Haven't heard great things about Jets defense, guys. And Carson Benj, I don't know enough about him in the outfield. I'm not sure either of those guys will have a Pete Alonso. They're going to need to have a Pete Alonso 2019 spring to break camp. I don't think they're going to be handed anything. And that's a very risky thing. Not only put a guy at short that I've heard mixed reviews defensively in Jet, but having two rookies start off the year on the roster. I know the Mets did it with Pete in 2019 at first, but you know, and to a certain degree, McNeil, I remember as well. But I'm not sure the expectations of the team was in the same spot then as they are now. I agree with you there, Sal, that they can't be worse hitters than Acuna. That's a pretty low bar. From what I understand, Benj is the real deal, and they expect him to evolve into a core, not a Michael Conforto-type hitter, but a core elite offensive hitter. But I'll take the floor of Michael Conforto before Michael Conforto kind of declined and became, what's his name from Texas? Joey Gallo, for lack of a better word. Okay, here it is. He likes Brett Beatty at second, Sal. I understand he could hit 20 home runs at the position, maybe thinking Jeff Kent there. I'm not sure that's the run prevention the Mets want. I guess Stearns would have to see if he can improve. I don't have his range factor here. I think he was all right at second. I thought he was better at third, to be frank. But I could see where you're going there. You're looking to move guys around and get offense at the positions. I don't think that's where David Stearns is going to go. You talk about Brandon Nimmo becoming a full-time DH. Not a problem there with that. Could the Mets then go out and get a Kyle Tucker, sign him to a big deal, move Soto to left, and then find some right-handed pop elsewhere other than Pete at first? You want to know a perfect offseason offensively? You improve the offense by bringing in Kyle Tucker, and then Pete comes back to play first. You beef up the, you know, and then Tucker's a little bit of a risk because he's also getting injured. I don't have a problem moving Nimmo to a DH, especially considering that Pete's probably not going to want to play DH. And the thing is, I don't think he's like at a level, Nimmo, where he can never play the field. You may be able to put him out there. I think you need to get him off his feet more. I think you could maybe spot him against certain pitchers where there's not going to be as much of a risk of him hurting you in left field. Moving him down in the lineup, that's where he may go. Look, I compared him to a late career Paul O'Neill, Tito Martinez. Those guys moved down the lineup later in their career, so I don't have a problem with that. Move Soto to left. He has too many fly balls fall in front of him in right. I don't have any problem strong arming left. I have no problem with that. That's probably something that may happen, depending on where they go. You would like to give Ronnie Mauricio a chance in right. You're really taking a lot of risks here, Sal, man. Let me tell you, you're the antithesis of me on this. I think he's athletic. I agree with you. I think the plate discipline is something that it will have to come. Can he be Alfonso Soriano type player? I think it's in there. You talk about him hitting 230 with 12 to 18 home runs. That's not going to be enough for me to give him the job in right field. If anything, I think Mauricio is a guy that needs to go play winter ball, spend some time in AAA next year, be very versatile and play all around the field and learn how to hit. And if he does that, he has a spot on the Mets. If he doesn't get traded, and maybe his talent and his tantalizing talent is enough to make him a big part of a deal for something they need. Trade Vientos and McNeil. I agree with that. I think both, depending on what they get back, I wouldn't just dump them, get back. I think Vientos doesn't fit this roster. I don't think he's going to hit enough to justify the bat and nothing else that he does. I love Jeff McNeil. I've been resistant to trading Jeff McNeil. I just don't think he's the same hitter that he once was. So I'm more open to him being traded now. Maybe change of scenery for him would be good. And you want to talk about changing things up, which I think Stearns will want to do, because he's still a very good defensive player and he's got versatility. He's not chopped liver, but that's the most harmless change of scenery, semi-core player. And I didn't even bring him up, you know, in his offense, because on the Talking Mets, let me find it here, on the Talking Mets run contribution meter, that's what we'll call it. We got to figure out something, like maybe you guys could send me an email and say, what would you like to call this run creation meter? McNeil was about 11% of their, contributed to 11% of their runs. Not bad. Listen, you don't want to throw away 10% of anything. Look, take 10% of your household income and throw it in the trash right now. How's your household income look? Here you go. But Sal from Connecticut, Sal, appreciate it. Some interesting thoughts. That's a lot of mental bubblegum. When Sal didn't lie when he said he was going to have mental bubblegum. All right. Now we have James Schwartz, reaction to Stearns press conference. He brings up Jarren Duran as available and likely the odd man out in Boston's outfield. The kid can fly and plays gold glove defense. He has 18 homers and 84 RBIs with 12 triples. They dangled him at the deadline. You see, actually, this is an interesting thing. Let's just start here with Duran. He's one of the names I've looked at because I agree with everything that James Schwartz says. Although in talking to some people who know him a little bit better, he's better at corner than center field. Now, I have some information, and I don't watch him every day, that had him as a decent glove in center. But he did, what did he make that, against the Yankees, didn't he make that bad play in the outfield or something that got Giancarlo Stanton to second? So I've been concerned more about the off the field. I know he came out in that Netflix special and talked about, you know, the mental toll that the fans took on him. Heard great things about the kid. Heard he's a good corner. You want to tell he's an upgrade over Nimmo at this point because he's healthier and provides more versatility. As a matter of fact, Duran is somebody that I thought Nimmo might evolve into. The triples, the pop. He couldn't stay healthy, Nimmo. Once he had that herniated disc in his neck, he became more of a station-to-station player, I think, at that point. So I think that you're onto something, James. We'll look more into that. I don't know. I know the Mets have inquired about him. I think the question is he a solution defensively in center field? That will be the interesting situation. Moving Nimmo to DH, you're not the first one to talk about that. As far as pitching, you bring up the pitching. talk about getting Tarek Skubal. I don't know if a big name like Skubal will be out there, Paul Skeens, someone like that. I'm focused more on, will the Twins trade Joe Ryan? I know Pablo Lopez's name has come up around circles. What will the Marlins do with Alcantara? And that's where I'd be going. But we'll talk more about pitching acquisitions because next week we'll start to build out. Like this week was about, hey, let's talk about the roster and look at what's there to kind of get a foundation built. And we did, I think. I think I did a pretty good job. Next week we'll start looking at solutions and things like that. So from the website, John reached out to me from the website. Hello, Mike. First, I want to express my gratitude for your excellent presentation of on our beloved Mets. Some people would argue with you, John, that maybe it's not as excellent, but thank you. I regularly listen to your podcast. I started listening last season and became a Talking Mets member. In a recent episode, you discussed a few players, how the Mets might address some issues next season. You mentioned the possibility of trading Brandon Nimmo. I've heard you say this a couple of times and has me confused because Nimmo has a full no-trade clause built in his contract. That's something I'm missing. So no, John, you're right. I think when I was looking at it, and the more I look at it, it's just not possible. If you were going to trade somebody that is of impact, and I don't consider because I think McNeil has fallen outside of that and Vientos has fallen outside of that. Out of those core players, and let's say Pete is a free agent, Nimmo's the one that I think is making $20 million a year. He still has value above and beyond. He has a no-trade clause, but those sometimes, depending on where you send him, have a way of moving it around. And I think Nimmo's the kind of guy that if you came to him and said, hey, you know, we're looking to do something, where would you go? And I don't think that's the case. I think the more I thought about it, I put it out there because it was an easy thing to look at in a vacuum. But when you start looking at the factors, and I think if clubhouse is something that I'm really not as concerned about as the media and the fans are making it out to be, but good guys in the clubhouse and professionals in the clubhouse, Nimmo's one of those voices. Everybody has a different type of leadership. Pete has always been to be an emotional leader. Lindor is a guy that goes out there, talks to the media, makes the big money, plays every day, plays a premium position. There's a different type of leadership there, almost by example. Soto, another one, leader by example, work ethic, go out there, perform. Nimmo, to me, might be a guy that a lot of young players, because he was a guy that was a high pick, had to work to get himself to be better, didn't come from a baseball factory, really has a lot of the experiences throughout his career. Backup, big contract, you know, evolved as a hitter, improved his game. Like, he's the kind of guy that I think young players could go to and learn a lot from. And I think it would be a mistake just to let him go, but you never know what you could get. I think the fact that he makes a lot of money and that he's on the back, he's a risky contract on the back half, even at $20 million per. I mean, look at Marte. He was making similar money, and the last 2 or 3 years, you were getting very little. You only got $5 million of value from Marte, according to Fangraphs this past year. Good player to have as a component backup player. And we all know what he did for the Mets last year. He was always on base when there was a big, big moment throughout the postseason. But you're overpaid him. And that's what probably will happen to Nimmo, and that's probably why he's going to stay. But it's still a good contract. I still think it'll age well the next 2 or 3 years. Maybe the last 2 or 3 years of it, of the 8-year deal, it won't be. But that's another thing. And then Steve. Here's what Steve had to say. Why does two-hitting coaches bother you, Mike? You have to adjust here. That's the norm. It's 2025, not 1995 or 2005. You complain about analytics with hitting, but the Dodgers and Yankees do it and it works. Have to grow with the game. Staying in the past is how other teams pass you and you fall behind. I have no dispute about that, Steve. My thing is, I think it doesn't belong as big in the dugout with the iPad as it is. I think watching the game is important. Watching, you do your prep work before the game. You do your video before the game. And I understand you want to see pitchers. And you want to go in between that bats down into the clubhouse and look at some things, fine. I think they did that back in the day. But watching the pitcher, watching the game, I just think that that's so important. As far as two hitting coaches, you know, Chavez talked about two different voices. I'm not saying you can't have them to do different roles and to work, because there's so many players on a roster now. But do you need to hear it from two different people? No matter, unless they're the clone of each other, I think too many voices is not good. And the Mets have had this issue before. They had it in 21 where there was a feeling where there was too much analytics after they fired Chili Davis. And then they brought in a Chavez, and they did well in 2022. But it was the players, right? And that's what I always say. Players ultimately are going to determine this. Where it went wrong, from what I understand, is that Chavez wasn't a fit for the young players. I don't think that's a surprise. I think that was kind of out there without it being secret sauce here. So, you know, that's where I'm at. But look, I will admit, Steve is right. I tend to be a little more old school. I think analytics is important. I've evolved a lot on analytics. I used to be very anti-analytics back in the day. Anybody who followed me during the NY Baseball Digest days, I was like, hey, this is a cottage industry scam. There is a lot of good stuff that comes out of it. But I will tell you, you have to use some common baseball sense, and you cannot be beholden to every principle. And, you know, the Mets are going all in. You know, you'll see that with the coaching. You'll particularly see that with drive line and the pitching. This is Stearns' baby now. Look, he's purged it. All the stuff that came before is pretty much being purged. And you will see some players that he inherited being purged. I think McNeil is a perfect example of that. I don't know about the core. I think that's more complicated because his core is not there yet. His young core is not there yet. I think you have to transition the core with the new core. And they're nowhere near on the offensive side doing that. Pitching, that's different. They may be much closer to that. And if you listen to Stearns, that's where the bread and butter is. And I agree with him because you could buy offense and feel confident of it aging. Even a Nimmo is still very valuable at his contract. It's long, but it's like a credit card. They spread out the payments. Those last couple of years, the payments might be a little bit more than what you get in return. But you got a good player, a good clubhouse guy, and I'm not so sure he's going to be traded. I think it was a thing that I threw out there initially to say, hey, that's a guy that maybe you could see what you get, but it's too complicated. And the aging factor and the health makes it where you're not going to get value. So anyway, that's it. Hope you enjoyed the mailbag segment. A lot we unpacked here on this show. Probably went quicker than some of the topics deserve, but we set up, I think, the offseason well. So stay tuned for more. There may be a big Talking Mets announcement this week, so stay tuned. It will come out on the podcast. I'll just do a special, like, 5 or 6 minute short teaser show that'll come out. Not on the premium site. It'll be on the podcast for everybody. Of course, go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get the chat. Love to have you. You don't have to pay for that. Premium, you know, that always is evolving. You know, we're going to try to set it up. And part of the big announcement is we're going to really set it up so that the free subscribers get one experience and a good experience. The premium get their money's worth. I want to continue to evolve that. And the goal of this offseason, including helping all of us work together to build the Mets, is to really build some nice demarcation between the different experiences you have with Talking Mets. And whatever you want, I'm going to try to bring you something that is valuable, that you have your time, which the one thing I say, this is your time you're investing, and I don't want it to be wasted. I can't promise you'll love everything I say. Not everything I'll hit on the mark. And just like a ball player, I'll have good performances and bad performances. But I want your time to be well spent. Hopefully I do that. So anyway, want to thank everybody for tuning in to this edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You could go to talkingmetspodcast.com, get the chat, get the premium content. You can find me on your favorite podcasting service, whatever you desire, talkingmetspodcast.com. Till next time, take care, everybody.